This podcast is for investment professionals only. The value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Good day, everyone. I'm Ron Insana, and welcome to the U.S. Lens as we take a look at the world markets through the lens of the United States and our strategists at Schroders. As we kick off this week, it appears that the Santa Claus rally may be underway, given that we're getting two presents this week. One is a vaccine distribution rollout in the United States and possibly a relief and stimulus package from the federal government. Joining us now to talk about how that will affect U.S. and overseas markets is John Mackay. He's head of U.S. Wealth Management Solutions and Market Strategist at Schroders in New York. And John, it looks like Santa Claus may well be on his way.
It looks that way. I mean, if you think back to literally 3 months ago, it could just as easily have been the Grinch. We didn't have a vaccine at that point. You had the uncertainty of the U.S. election, and you had a lot of partisanship between members of Congress. So there was no guarantee we would get fiscal stimulus, certainly no guarantee we'd get a vaccine as effective as we've seen the Moderna and the Pfizer BioNTech vaccines be about a month ago. So it looks like good things are coming our way for the first time this year over Christmas.
Now, strategist Tom Lee refers to the group as the epicenter stocks. We've talked about it as a recovery trade. And that's also been in play for a while now, where if indeed all this comes to pass and we start to see more positives than negatives, this rotation that we've talked about, big to small, growth to value, domestic to international, has done quite well over the last many weeks. Is this something that has legs?
Oh, I think it has a lot of legs. And I would think there's a number of factors that play into that. One is just plain fundamentals. You're going into a year next year where economic growth is clearly going to be a lot better than it was this year. Part of that would obviously be the vaccine rollout and the ability of people to get out there and do more than they could do this year. That helps the services sector in the U.S. tremendously, which has been under so much pressure over the last 12 months. And then you've got all this stimulus behind that. You've got the Fed, who are meeting this week. We may get a little bit more clarity on their path forward for bond purchases, as well as fiscal stimulus, which you mentioned a little bit earlier. And so I think the impact on those sectors that have been punished during the pandemic is going to be pretty profound. And so we think that it can continue. It's going to have legs. There's going to be mixed shifts within that reopening trade that are going to go back and forth between the most beaten up stocks to ones that have been sort of laggards for a long period of time. But we think it can last for quite a long period of time, not just a 3 month blip.
Now, I've been making a pretty strong case on CNBC and elsewhere that public markets have no discounting mechanism for some of the carnage, if not all of the carnage we're seeing on Main Street. The shuttering of 100,000 restaurants nationwide. In New Jersey alone, we've seen somewhere between 28 to 31% of small businesses either shut or shutting for good. And that's something that the market simply, except in the macro sense, doesn't necessarily discount, and we don't even see it that way. There is this big divide between Wall Street and Main Street. How does that get reconciled?
So it's unfortunate. You don't see it in the headline numbers, as you said, on the indices that represent, in theory, corporate America, right? Corporate America does not capture small businesses that aren't listed on a stock exchange. It doesn't capture those small restaurants you mentioned. And so I think, unfortunately, we're going to go through a period over the next year to 2 years where a lot of those small businesses, which have already gone out of business, we're going to continue to see those numbers pile up, as well as low-income consumers that have been given a bit of a reprieve by some of the fiscal stimulus and mortgage forbearance and things like that. But those programs are going to go away over time. So there will be pain experienced for certain businesses and certain households coming out of this crisis. And that's very similar to every single recession we've gone through over the last 100 years. Markets tend to discount a reopening or an improvement in economic conditions, which is captured by the largest companies that are listed on those exchanges. And you still see a lot of pain, bankruptcies, both household bankruptcies as well as corporate bankruptcies taking place. Think back to 2009, the markets bottomed in March of that year. the economic recession didn't end until later that year, and you still had a lot of corporate defaults happening as well as consumer defaults happening through 2009 and into 2010.
I went back even a little farther and noticed that from 1932 to 1937, the Dow tripled even at the depths of the Great Depression. Is there kind of a semi-analog there insofar as Main Street took an extraordinarily long time to recover, but again, Wall Street simply did not?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, look, this gets back to the idea that I hate to sound a little bit cynical here, but the rich will continue to get richer, right? If you have access to capital, if you have the means to weather the storm, you will benefit from this. There's, you know, the way I think about it next year is you have, 100,000 restaurants or so in New York City. I don't know what the exact number is. That number will shrink dramatically. And the ones that survive will get considerably stronger. They'll have pricing power. They'll have market share dominance. They will thrive, and that will bring in competition. And over time, you'll get some of the businesses that went out of that weren't able to survive coming back, or replacements coming back. So it's sort of this washing out mechanism, which sometimes takes place in the corporate sector. So we see a lot of, you know, some recessions are centered on the corporate sector, and that's where the bankruptcies occur. Sometimes it's centered on the consumer sector, like 08, 09 was. And this one's a little bit of a mix, but the corporate sector is really encapsulated in the small businesses versus the big listed companies.
Now, as we speak, the Electoral College is preparing to certify the results of the election. It'll take till January 6th for Congress to recognize that. And on January 5th, we've got the runoff for the two Senate seats in Georgia. The market seems unmoved by all the political machinations that have gone on since November 3rd. Do you suspect that'll remain true going forward?
I think it will, even if the Democrats win those two seats in Georgia. I think it's important to remember that you would have a split Senate, 50-50, 50 Democrats, 50 Republicans. Kamala Harris would be able to break that tie. She would be the tie-breaking vote. But the problem is that you have such a mix of political leanings within the Democratic body. You have senators like Joe Manchin, who is in theory in his makeup and the state he represents more Republican than Democrat. And you have senators like Bernie Sanders, who's at the far left spectrum. So getting major policy changes through, I think, will be difficult. Getting small changes through, I think, will be certainly doable. And I think that's what the market was worried about heading into the election, is these major policy initiatives on the back of a potential blue wave. And we didn't get the blue wave. We didn't get anything close to that. We've got Biden as a president. We've got the Democrats maintaining control of Congress. And we'll have a bit of a split Senate here. So I think you will get policy changes. I don't think the market's going to pay them much heed. The likelihood of major tax overhaul or anything like that, I think, will take time and will be at the margin, small changes rather than large changes. So I think the market is actually right to not pay much attention to it.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, you're listening to the Investor Download.
Now, as we look around the world, I mean, obviously there are geopolitical hotspots. Europe is still struggling with either a possibility of a no-deal Brexit, though the conversations on that have been extended. China appears to be turning anti-business in some of its practices, even though its market has outperformed much of the rest of the world this year. Are there areas outside the U.S. that we talk about, generally speaking, favorably, but that trouble you in some way that will merit maybe deeper analysis come 2021?
Perhaps, but I think the overwhelming thing the market will pay attention to is growth. And I think that, you know, Brexit is a risk. It's reflected to some degree in UK equity indices and the way they're priced relatively cheaply. The pound has sold off a little bit recently. This is the 50th or 55th time Brexit talks have been extended. So I think that, you know, the market is used to it. And it looks like they might be, I don't want to, hope for the best and not prepare for the worst. It looks like they might be able to reach a deal before the deadline, or at the very least push the deadline back a bit. And so those are things that I think that are always there in the background. And I think the key for market participants is to look throughout the market landscape and say, where am I getting a good price for good growth? And that seems to be in stocks right now that are cyclically oriented, levered to global trade, emerging markets, a lot of Europe. And Europe, to me, is really one of the better stories out there right now. It's highly tied to...
Explain why. I was just going to say, because they're getting crushed by the coronavirus right now. I know the vaccine's coming. They've struggled in some ways even more than, well, not more than the U.S., but more than other parts of the world in getting this contained. And it looks like there's been a dampening effect on growth. So where do you see the alternative positive view?
So I guess the alternative positive view is Europe has been a show me story, right? You've had the European sovereign debt crisis coming out of 2008, 2009. You had austerity, so they didn't spend to try and help those economies through those tough times. You had the the southern periphery of Europe really, really struggling. I mean, Greece basically almost did become an emerging market, basically defaulted on its debts. A developed market economy doing that is the first time we've seen that in quite some time. And now you're at a period where they've tightened their belts a little bit. The fiscal restraint has put their houses in better order. I wouldn't say better. And another crisis has basically spurned a move towards fiscal consolidation. They're doing fiscal stimulus next year. It'll start rolling out in the back half of next year. For the first time ever, this is the Hamilton moment for Europe. And so I think from a number of factors, the fact that you have cheaper valuations, you have a strong tie to emerging markets and global trade out of Europe, you have fiscal consolidation, fiscal stimulus, very strong stimulus from the ECB, it puts Europe in a position to, A, grow its economy at a faster pace than the U.S. will next year. That's the Schroeder's forecast. Same with 2022. That should deliver better earnings growth. And you have a makeup of a market there that is just more skewed to cyclical sectors than we have here in the U.S. So I think, and sentiment is low, right? Show me that Europe can work and I'll invest in Europe. And so I think the ability for Europe to surprise to the upside is significantly greater than what you have here in the U.S. market.
The final question then, what is it, if there is one thing that you're keeping an eye on that could affect the outlook that you have for 2021, is there any one thing, negative thing that is keeping you up at night?
You want me to pick one negative thing?
As many as you want. All right, to make it whatever list you want.
So I think a policy mistake. That's what worries me the most. We've had this change, and I'll pick on the Fed for a second. We've had this change in Fed policy, the average inflation targeting. We don't know exactly yet how much higher than average inflation, they'll let inflation go. For how long will they let it go? If it does, will they start tapering first? And then if we can even get there. So that's what worries me a little bit, because we're not in a great shape today. We're in better shape from an outlook perspective, but the economy's still on a fragile footing. And I think we do need that policy support for quite some time. So my hope is the Fed will sort of, take a back seat, let the economy run a little bit, let inflation run a little bit higher. And when we say higher inflation, we're talking about just above 2%. We're not talking about 5-7% runaway inflation. And so that's what worries me a little bit. I don't want to go back to what we went through in the years after the great financial crisis, where you had a combination of fiscal austerity, then you had the Fed talking about tapering, and then you had hiking rates in 2016. It was just too much too soon. So give us a couple of years of runway and we'll be good. Act too soon and we could be in trouble again. So that's probably the biggest thing that worries me going into next year.
All right, John, always a pleasure. Since this is our last one, have a happy holidays, happy new year. We'll talk
to you as well
in 2021. Thank you, John Mackay, who is head of U.S. Wealth Management Solutions and Market Strategist at Schroeder's North America. I'm Ron Insana. This is our last U.S. Lens for 2020. They say 2020 is hindsight, and we can only hope that is the case, that we'll put this year into our rearview mirror. We will talk to you again early next year. Enjoy the holidays, everyone, and happy new year.
That was the show. We very much hope you enjoyed it. If you want to read more about any of the subjects we've spoken about in these shows, go to schroeders.com/insights. You can listen to a whole back catalogue at schroeders.com/the investor download. If you want to get in touch with us, it's schroederspodcast@schroeders.com. Feel free to pose any questions. And if you want to rate, review and subscribe to us, you can do that via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, with new shows available on a Monday and Thursday from 5 p.m. UK time. But most importantly, keep safe and go well. Cheers.